Welcome to Rochester, Minnesota. Day 4 of the Pro Farmer Midwest Crop Tour is in the books. That means the whole dadgum tour is in the books. We've got Brian Grady, Pro Farmer Editor. It's good to see you, buddy. It's been a long week.
It has, Chip. You know, I feel good, though.
Yeah. Well, you look great.
Yes. Yes.
Now, I don't know how you're feeling because you're not looking all that good, Mr. Wilson.
Kind of looking like the corn in Minnesota.
You know, you're just projecting.
Green.
You're just projecting what you saw today.
Exactly.
All right, let's get right to the numbers here, guys, because the numbers have been released. Brian, take us through Iowa.
Well, corn yield 188.2.
Yeah.
And that is down.
Up.
I'm sorry, up 4.7% from last year.
Yep.
Once again, we find, you know, bigger corn yields here in the state of Iowa. I will say that when you break it down by district, there's quite a variance. And we kind of knew that.
Yeah.
You know, there's areas that were too hot and too dry, areas that were too wet, yeah, and areas that were darn near perfect.
Okay, before we get too far into the discussion here, go ahead and give us the Iowa bean.
Iowa beans were 1208.99, so we'll just call it 1209. And that was up 10.6%.
Okay.
So, you know, the theme that we saw across the entire Eastern Corn Belt, you guys saw it in the Western Corn Belt.
Yep.
We saw it again in Iowa. Pod counts are up.
Okay. Before I reopen the show again, let's go ahead and get the Minnesota numbers out there, Jeff.
All right. In Minnesota, we found an average yield down 6.7% at 178.7 bushels.
Okay.
And that's a little bit bigger than maybe some people were thinking, but not Minnesota farmers that were on the crop tour this week. They told us it was bad, and this is bad. And then if we want to go look at the Minnesota soybean pod counts, same story as what we've had in every other state. It's up 7% from a year ago at 1090, or call it 1,091 pods, up from 1,020 pods a year ago.
Right. Okay, so we've got the numbers out of the way. Welcome to the Crop Tour podcast, everyone. It's sponsored by Pioneer. We've been getting you the numbers as quick as we can here tonight. Now let's start to dig into these numbers a bit. Brian, Iowa corn up 4.7%. We've been looking at higher ear counts on the eastern leg of the tour all week. Did that continue into Iowa?
It did not, Chip.
Wow.
We were down 0.8% on ear counts. So that's pretty amazing when everybody else is showing higher ear counts, all the other states, and we get to Iowa, and there it is. It's down just less than 1%.
Well, Jeff, we ran into that in southwest Iowa in particular. There's a lot of green snap down there. That might have had a – well, no, it not might have. It did have an influence on that number. And western Iowa in general,
was
I think
all
we,
down.
We, yeah,
all,
we were all down.
Yes.
So
– made it up a little bit on grain length in District 4.
Right.
And in 1.
Yes. So – the maturity of the crop. How's it look over here?
Well, not nearly as mature as what it is in the Eastern Corn Belt, that's
right,
for sure. We saw dented corn broadly across Ohio, Indiana, Illinois. We get into Iowa, and not quite dented yet.
Now, day one in Iowa on Wednesday afternoon, down in the southeast part of the state where it's been drier, what was the maturity down there?
Yeah, there is some that's been pushed along, no doubt about that. But, you know, as we moved into this last day and you go up through that eastern side of the state from Iowa City on north, you know, we had corn that we were pulling samples. And I'd pulled one sample personally this week that wasn't dented before today.
Mm-hmm.
And I got some today that I mean, there was probably only a handful of my samples that were actually starting to dent.
Yeah. Does that make you feel better or more concerned about the Iowa corn yield?
Well, it just means we measured more potential, not as much yield. We measured a lot of yield when we were out in the Eastern Corn Belt. So it means that it could add some, it could lose some.
Right.
We don't know yet into the finish line. Bigger mystery, I would say, on Iowa than what the other states were.
Right. Okay, so that Minnesota corn crop, Jeff, down 6.7%, 178.7 bushels per acre. That compares to a 191.5 that we pulled out of Minnesota a year ago. Maturity on the crop?
It's pretty young.
Yeah.
It's there was still some corn that looked like it just tasseled within the last 2 weeks.
Wow.
In central Minnesota, where I think some of the heaviest rains had hit. The Southwest was a little further along than I think I was expecting, just starting to dent. But there were several fields that we did measure that were still in dough. And very big problem in terms of if you look at the ear count, also down in Minnesota.
Oh, it is.
Grain length, also down. And the kernels around, also down. We do have, it's kind of like, it's a little bit like Iowa, where there is a chance to go up,
yep.
a chance to subtract.
Yep.
And right now the crop is, it's racing a little bit against time. And I would say that the situation is going to be very interesting to see how it goes from here on forward.
Okay. I didn't pull any samples out of Minnesota or out of Iowa, Brian. But the color of that Minnesota corn crop, as I was coming down, making the way across the southern part of the state on I-90, it's not very good. It looks to me like this crop is running out of gas.
Chartreuse green is what we called it in the car all day long. And it was interesting because it was consistently,
yes.
it was either a really chartreuse green or maybe just a little lime green,
yeah.
but it was consistent in across from western through central. It got a little bit better as we got into eastern southern Minnesota.
Yeah.
But that two-thirds of the southern, which is the highest producing parts of the state, it is running out of gas, similar to what we saw in northwest Iowa yesterday.
Yeah, absolutely. Brian, the plant health in Iowa?
Pretty phenomenal on the eastern side of the state. When you go from I-80 north, and you just take that portion through eastern Iowa, boy, it's green, it's lush, it's tall, and there's a lot of ears out there. The plant health gives me some hope that maybe it will finish solidly, but there are questions there because it still has to get to the finish line.
Yeah, absolutely. You've got the Iowa breakdown, right, on the districts in front of you?
I do.
Okay, I got to give a shout out to a huge friend of the Pro Farmer Midwest Crop Tour, Keith Gehling from AgriSource. Goes out, puts together a team, gets out into South Central Iowa, where it's just tough for you coming from Iowa City, making it to Rochester. Us coming, it's just tough for the scouts to get there. Keith goes out there and pulls us a bunch of samples.
He does. I think he was 21, 22, something like that, over 2 days this year.
Yep.
You know, so that's a huge help.
Yeah. Oh, huge help.
And otherwise, we would miss a bigger portion of that District 8.
Right.
South Central.
Right.
So,
well, we wouldn't get all 99 counties like we do.
Right. Correct. Yeah. Correct.
Yeah. That's the area of the state that has been very dry. We've been concerned about it. What did Keith find down there for us in Crop District 8?
Well, the ear counts were way down there, 84.8. So that was the lowest district of any of the nine in Iowa. The grain length was down as well, 6.47. And then the kernel rows, they were actually up. And just scanning through this quickly, that's the highest kernel rows that we had in any of the districts.
Oh, you're right about that ear count being down, too, because a year ago it was 94.33, and the three-year average is 96.15, and Keith was at 84-something.
Yeah, 84.8, so down significantly.
Yeah. But the yield still did pretty good.
It did. You know, it was a 150.6. I mean, it's given the circumstances, and Keith's comment, you know, he was talking last night in front of Iowa City. We got him up in front of the crowd and wanted to let him. And he called me beforehand, and he said, you know what, there was a lot of these fields I'd pull up, and I'm thinking, you know, maybe 50 or 70 or 100 bushel. And I'm going in, and I'm pulling out samples, and it's 130, 140, 150.
Yeah.
So it's hanging on, way better than what he thought it would.
It's better than year ago.
But at the same time, it's still probably not what the producer wanted.
Oh, absolutely.
When spring started. So right. The impacts of too hot and too dry down through that area, and it isn't just there,
but
it's into Missouri.
Yes.
So we know from talking to producers down there that they've the same stuff. Kansas has the same issues. You know, it's that southern tier of the Corn Belt that you know has struggled the most, and we knew that going into tour, but it was confirmed with the polls that we had there.
Right. You know, a year ago down there in Crop District 8, it was 141.5, and now he's in the 150s.
Well, they had a real struggle last year too.
Yeah.
It's back to back years.
Yep.
So.
Yep. Doggone it. All right, beans. Let's get onto those and talk a little bit about the plant health and everything. No, we need to back up. I'm sorry. The big question, kernel depth and kernel size. Brian, I can't imagine that you saw many issues with it today.
No. You know, I think the girth of the ear,
mm-hmm.
I was more impressed actually with Illinois on the girth of the ear than I was with Iowa.
Really?
Yeah. I you know, they're just long ears, but they weren't as big around as you're pulling them off, and
where's girthy?
Yeah, and so that is a, you know, you're like, okay,
yeah, well, but the development's a little bit behind. So
it's there's a potential to build that
right
into the finish line.
6-10 day forecast from the National Weather Service has got some heat coming in. That's the last thing that crop really needs.
Well, it has some moisture, so that should help some, as long as it isn't excessive heat.
Right.
So, you know, we'll see how it plays out. It's much better situation having the soil moisture than being dry going into it.
Exactly.
That would finish it.
Absolutely.
At that point in time. You know, now you wave the white flag and it's over with, and whatever's out there, you've backed off somewhat.
Right. Jeff, what about in Minnesota for the kernel size?
The ears that we measured today looked a little small. Mm-hmm. We had a tip back. We had problems that even the 14 around rows, the kernels weren't very big.
Yeah.
I didn't measure anything past central Minnesota, so okay. I'm not sure what happened on the east. Yeah. But it does look like, you know, kernel depth is a problem, but like we said earlier, the crop is relatively immature.
Right.
So it does have some time. It does appear there is soil moisture, like Brian was talking about. So it's not like we're going into this hot, dry period with a situation with no soil moisture.
Right.
So there's potential. But how quickly can it get down to that soil moisture necessarily? Because I think the roots are relatively shallow.
Yeah. And the other thing there is there enough nitrogen for that crop to finish? Right.
That's the bigger question.
Yeah.
Much bigger.
And with like I said earlier, it looks to me like the crop's running out of gas, and I don't know. It looked kind of pukey green, and the Jeff, the Minnesota producers, and we've got a great group of producers from Minnesota on the tour with us. They're not very optimistic in that south central part of the state.
They're very nervous.
Yeah. Definitely.
About
okay.
What they're going to have.
Okay, beans. We were starting off the conversation on soybeans. Did you run into any disease issues?
No, not really. I mean, you're always going to have a little bit here and there, but I think this is the year of the clean bean crop for the most part.
Unbelievable.
Yes. And
there's still issues out there, but wow.
Yes, and it's the year of the heavily potted bean crop. I mean, they are hanging a lot of pods at this point in time.
Yeah, you know, and we've talked about this along the way, but we all understand that the bean crop is a light-sensitive crop. It matures based on the length of night is how that crop starts to mature. But the agronomist in Spencer yesterday, that was the night before. Anyway, whatever, explained that if it is hot enough and it accumulates those growing degree days at a quick enough pace, which it was doing in June, normally you wouldn't start to really pod until June 21, you know, the summer solstice. That's when you start to pod. But they were starting to pod in the first week of June on a crop that wasn't planted all that early. So something triggered this bean crop. I don't know what it was, but something triggered this bean crop to go ahead and start setting pods earlier. And it's also looking like it's wrapping up earlier, guys, right? Because we're not seeing those little quarter-inch pods. We're not seeing that off-colored green at the top of the plant where we're getting a new trifoliate. We're not seeing blooms. This bean crop is not going to add to itself based from what it's got right now.
No, the factory is there, and we've got a lot of pods, and they're pretty plump at this point in time. Yeah. So they'll use the moisture to plump up even more.
Absolutely.
And, you know, that is. But you're not adding those extra pods that you do sometimes late in the year.
Everybody's been concerned about the disease moving into the Minnesota bean crop, Jeff. Did you notice anything?
Only a little bit.
Yeah.
I didn't think it was that heavy, but one of our crop scouts did see a little bit more further north than where I was, right along I-90 in the central part. They said it was starting to seep into that area.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. More than 1,400 corn samples, more than 1,400 soybean samples, you guys. What can you say about the guys that are out here pulling the samples for us?
Well, I can't say enough. I know that. They work as hard as they do every day, you know. And, you know, we got them from 6:30 in the morning until, I don't know, 4:30, 5 o'clock, whatever time they get in on the evening. And they give it our all. You know, they're out there. It's thankless work. You know, it wasn't hot this year, but it was wet.
Yep.
And I'd rather scout in the heat than the rain, which means that next year is probably going to be really hot because I just asked for it.
Thank you.
Yeah.
But
we're looking forward to hashtag PFTour19 now.
it's no fun to scout in the rain, and your side scouted in the rain. We scouted in the rain, and you know, it's rough to get in and out of a vehicle when it's pounding, pouring down on you, and yet they did it, and they did it to the tune of 1,400 samples of corn and soybeans.
Right. So a total of 2,800 samples.
Jeff, but they did. They got up in the morning. They had a smile on their face. And then when they came back, they had a smile on their face. Yeah. It was awesome to meet for those people.
Tell me how your perspective of the scouts has changed, because you've come on 15, 20 Midwest crop tours. You've done other tours out there, but you were always as a scout and media. This is the first time that you were leading this group. What'd you think?
The biggest difference for me was that as a reporter, people are less willing to talk to you openly, even though when you get into that car and you say everything is off the record to get the conversation. The conversations I had in the cars this week, riding around South Dakota, Nebraska, Western Iowa, and Minnesota, which is not an area that I'm as familiar with as the East side, was awesome. We had great conversations, everything, sports, politics, even farming.
Yeah. Yeah, even farming showed up in the conversation. I love it. Well, I want to tell you this. This is the first year that I've gone on tour. I've done 29. And this is the first year that I didn't pull a sample. I'm not going to say that it changes what I think of the tour at all, because I was working on data, obviously doing AgriTalk. But I was working on data with who I think was maybe the hardest working person out here on crop tour. And that was Emily Carlin from Pioneer. She's also my daughter. That's why you can hear me getting a little emotional here. But Emily checked every sample. I couldn't believe the dedication that she had in checking each and every sample from the western leg and from the western leg and the eastern leg, all 2,800 samples. She checked it and stayed at it, and we got this data done on a more timely basis than we've ever done. I mean, hats off to her, right?
Definitely, definitely. Yeah. You know, I told her every night she did a great job, and I meant it when I said it.
So, yeah.
You know, we couldn't do that data that quickly without her.
That's right.
My first year in here and seeing how much data is going through that computer every night.
Right.
Awesome.
Right.
Done right, done correctly, done on time.
Right. Exactly. So big thank you to Emily for being out here on the road with us and making sure that we've got timely and accurate data for the scouts. Guys, it's been a pleasure giving you perspective from Jeff Wilson, from Brian Grady on the Crop Tour podcast, sponsored by Pioneer. I'll say it again. These guys, they're not just sponsors of the Crop Tour. They're partners. They're out there providing awesome information at the evening meetings. The bar, paying for the bar, paying for the food. I mean,
they scout along with
us. Pioneer is a partner. And RCIS, a shout out to RCIS, another sponsor of the Crop Tour. They send scouts out there with us every day. And it's a pleasure working with these people. It's just an incredible experience being out here on the road with them. And guys, I'm telling you right now, it's an honor to work with the both of you and put this event on. It's really cool. So great job today.
Thanks, Chip.
Great Enjoyed job it. This week.
Yeah. It was a great job.
It was. All right. We're signing off from the Pro Farmer Midwest Crop Tour. Thanks again to Pioneer for sponsoring not only the tour, but the Crop Tour podcast available on the AgriTalk app. Guys, we'll see you at #PFTour19.